Dun-dun-dun-dun-dun. I think I'm talking over music because we have music to start the show. Ladies and gentlemen, none other than yours truly, John Browner, added in the one and only Jason Lawhead with his, I think that's the Garcia hat, or
yeah, man, yeah, from the promo last Friday, I decided, hey, to show some love, I bought a Garcia hat. I'm not a deadhead, but I always enjoyed the Grateful Dead. I'm that age where I still was old enough to see Jerry alive a few times before he died, summer of 93 and 94. So, but yeah, I'm going to see the Dead End Company with my wife on my birthday on the 30th at the Hollywood Bowl with John Mayer. And they're actually, I'll be a blasphemous. The Dead are better with John Mayer than Jerry Garcia by a mile. And Bob Weir's still in amazing shape. So the band sounds better than any of those old, you know, Jerry, sometimes they'd have to prop him up. He'd be in a diabetic coma. They would just have to hold him up and just have him string the guitar for some of those concerts. So
that's Jason Lawhead. Clearly, whether he wants to admit it or not, he is a deadhead. I'm John Brown.
I'm not a Bill Walton deadhead. I'm not that serious, you know. I don't wear tie-dye. This is the extent
and
of it.
Lawhead. You can see what we're talking about with Jason's awesome hat on YouTube. Under Kaplan and Crew, and we are Browner and Lawhead, and that's how you also find us in the podcast streams. Just look up Kaplan and Crew, and we are on there with the date first. You did a gig this weekend, man. How'd it go?
Yeah, it was great. You know, it was one of those kind of last-minute gigs that I jumped on for an open week, so we had a little time to promote it, but we had a couple of people came up after each show that had heard me on the radio and had seen me at Grand Comedy Club before, so... yeah, the indoor shows were really crowded. The outdoor later shows were a little lighter, but the crowds were awesome. I'm going to tell you, they were four awesome shows. Kaplan came out with the girlfriend and another friend on Friday night when you were seeing Louie. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, it was a great weekend. Thanks to everybody who came out.
Speaking of Louie.
Yeah.
Louie's a great comedian. I'm a huge Louis C.K. fan. What I saw Friday night was okay. Partly because there was a woman in the second row.
Oh.
She had a massive rack. She was gorgeous. And she was dressed for the show, if you know what I mean.
Right.
She was high, out of her mind, and ruining the show for
That stinks.
Everyone in the vicinity that could hear her voice, because she would not shut up. Now, Louis's a professional, and he is a top of the top when it comes to a heckler. But the problem was, she wasn't heckling him. She just wouldn't stop talking about the show. So he was trying to be as nice as he possibly could because he understood she wasn't heckling him. But at the same time, she's ruining the show for the people around her. And she was clearly one of those people who gets whatever she wants because of her appearance. He referred to her as, she looks like she does very well in life multiple times because you know he can't really... vocalize anything about a woman at this point in his career because of what he's gone through. So he handled it brilliantly, but it also kind of took him off of script for a little bit.
Sure.
And it didn't happen once, it happened twice, to the point where the security surrounded the lady to try to get her out. And you were in the venue the previous night, so she was in the center row and the second, she was in the center section of the seats in the second row. In the second row, she's the seat next to the aisle seat. And so they had to try to get this woman out, and she did refuse to leave. And then people started yelling at her, and which, again, she wasn't heckling him. So then he was trying to help her. And so it just kind of took the show off beat.
Yeah.
But
and that ruins a theater, because in a theater, once you're basically the back of what a regular comedy club, you know, size indoor is, once you're at that distance and then back from there, which is a lot of seats, which is if they're either in the balcony or even in the lower mezzanine, where a regular comedy club wall would end in the back row, there's thousands of more seats. So in a comedy club, somebody in the second row does that in an intimate 200 to 300 seat venue. You can, as a performer, you know, put them against the ropes and everybody's included. So you can bring the audience into something like that. In a theater, you're on an island because you can't, the thousands of people, they don't, and they want the theater experience, right?
Yes.
So Friday, he was on fire. He didn't have any of those types of issues. The crowd was amazing.
Thursday, and you said you saw it Thursday. I saw it Friday.
I'm sorry, Thursday. Thursday, he was amazing. And we were lucky enough to see it. I thought, you know, that's too bad because it does throw him off script and it throws him off of his through line and his thread and his,
yes,
his kind of his message through the whole thing. And I thought he had one of the best, you know, Chappelle. I've loved every special Chappelle does, some better than others. I've got to open for Bill Burr for many, many shows in the past. And we're talking about some of the bigger risk takers in comedy, mm-hmm, at the top of the game. And I just thought what Louis did in this last one, like I said, I got to open for a little bit of him in Tampa. It wasn't constructed that much. He was just coming out of COVID, and that was in a small club venue. And from what I've seen polished out since then, is one of the best risk-taking, honest, but funny, punched up funny, where, mm-hmm, I think maybe Chappelle fell short on some funny in the last special as far as punched up funny to the message. I'm not criticizing it. What I'm saying is I think Louis was stronger in the punched up funny of all the things and the topics he was going after, pedophiles, some other things. And I'm not even going to say what a lot of this stuff is. Go see Louis if he's in your city, yes, and you're a fan, because he's talking about some really funny stuff. And I
would absolutely recommend people to go. I don't want my yeah, analysis of the show to detract from people.
It's a good, honest one. And it sucks that happened, because, you know,
it happened.
You pay money to see that. That's why the show people say before, please don't shout out at comedians. Please don't talk out. Just laugh and enjoy it. You know, everybody's here to enjoy the show. And you know, you're sitting back there as a theater member and you're like, man, what, man? This sucks. And if it chews up 15 to 20 to 25 minutes in different parts, it does ruin what he really came
to surprised.
Say.
I'm surprised. In the society we live in now, I'm surprised someone didn't throw something at that woman. Like, that's how bad it was.
Well, they do a good job of screening you on the way in. That's why. I mean, he put you through everything from, you know.
Two metal detectors. There were a line as long as in and out.
And if you just check a text message, even when that light screen, he's got
you.
People everywhere ready to step in. Like, there's no, like, even open your phone.
I mean,
they're on you. Kaplan just went to check a text between his legs, and somebody was just like, sir, phone, put it away. And you're like, wow. Early. And so, yeah, I think you're right, though. If they had the ability to just kind of walk through like the old, you know, the meme of the guy at the football game is checking people that has like his hands are like 50 feet around.
That's great.
She would have been probably murdered by that.
So that lady's a loser over the weekend. Okay. We on this show, you guys know we do winners and losers. Sometimes we do losers first. Sometimes we do winners first. We're going to do losers first, and then we'll get to actual football, because we know you guys have taken a lot of sports radio up to the point you get to us. And so we're trying to have some fun. And so today's loser, Jason's going to break down why we're talking about today's loser. Give it to him, Jason.
Oh, well, the loser, I mean, is fine. It's funny. Finally, Patrick Mahomes wins a game when he's been up against it, and his whole family's losers. I mean, his mom, his brother. What's wrong with these people? To quote the great comedian Sebastian Maniscalco, what's wrong with these people?
What do you want to start, the video or the mom's tweet?
Start the video, because basically the mom is the reason for all of this. Look at this. This is the brother who actually, until I saw this guy, I mean, are you kidding? And he's doing it on the memorial. I mean, he's doing it in, that's where the roped off little memorial for Taylor.
I mean, so what we're watching, if you're listening and you're going to head over to YouTube later to check it out, what we're watching is, what is his first name?
Jackson.
Of course,
that's a problem.
Jackson Mahomes, a tall, lanky kid in a pink sweater, basically doing a TikTok dance because there's not enough of those on the number of Sean Taylor, who on that day had a street outside dedicated to him, and then had his number put up in the Ring of Honor, and that number, which was sectioned off, this kid, because he's an adult, but he's acting like a kid, so I refer to him as such, basically doing a TikTok dance on Sean Taylor's number.
Yeah, I mean, it's like you're literally dancing on a grave.
Yes. Yes.
In a way. I mean, and it's just like, and you're so
clueless.
And the problem is you're so just oblivious to all of like just normal human behavior that you would even go do that there, not even intending any other than a TikTok dance. This is where we're at. Now, a lot of people might remember I always just knew Patrick Mahomes had a brother, you know, because of his backstory.
Right.
And until the water bottle incident, like, you know, what was that? The Ravens game.
Yes.
About three not weeks too long ago. So, a month ago. Right. So until then, I didn't know like what he looked like, who, and it's just like, then I find out he does these TikTok dances. And I was just like, oh my gosh, if I was Patrick Mahomes, see, this is why Aaron Rodgers doesn't talk to his brother. It's things like this. Patrick Mahomes has to make better decisions. Oh. He's got to be a little bit. I mean, aren't these guys are both with the same insurance company? Maybe Aaron can give him some pointers. But I mean, did you see the point? And the crazy thing is it's like he doesn't even. He looks more like Aaron Judge's sister than he does Patrick Mahomes' brother. I mean, what is going on with this guy? And I'm at a loss of words. Usually I have a whole bunch of stuff and I'm just sitting here shaking my head. And it's just another example of, you know, riding the coattail and just
it didn't doing stop there.
Anything, listen, doing anything for attention.
There's a lot of weight on Patrick Mahomes' coattail. Here's his mom. Who then said this on Twitter because he keeps throwing interceptions. Okay, people, that should not be an interception on the quarterback, her son Patrick. That should be a fumble or anything else. Fumble. Just putting it out there, go Chiefs. Look, man.
Are we going to have to start calling Karen's Randy's? Because
that's his mother's name.
That is ridiculous. And that's why nobody in her family has ever walked up to that Jackson and said, stop doing what you're doing. Slapped him in the back of the head and going, knock it off. Huh? What's wrong with you? Because mom thinks that he shouldn't get credit for interceptions. How about this? How about then we just change, you know, all the amazing catches that wide receivers bail quarterbacks out on, one-handed, getting both feet in, all these amazing. Why don't we? Those should just be rushing yards.
Yes.
No completion for the quarterback. Nothing to, No. I mean, what? It's like, oh, that went off the shoulder pad, and then it was picked up. Yeah, well, maybe it was thrown a little behind him, and it bounced off. That's what happens. It's unbelievable that the parent now is still parenting through professional adulthood. Could you imagine if your mom came to work, your job, anybody works in a cubicle and says, you know, John should be able to take an hour and a half lunch because I used to give him one as a kid. And it's just it's just like Ball's dad, you know, they don't stop parenting. It's like your children are adults now. They're professionals. Like,
right. Get out the way.
Just tweet, go Chiefs, love my son.
Right.
You know, head up. Don't let the INT get you down. We, you know, more, you know, what? Like, they should change the rule.
This family, unfortunately for Patrick Mahomes, who seems to just be an awesome dude, just an outright fun guy who gets it 100%, plays the game with fun and passion and energy. Of course his family's like this. Of course they are, because we can't get lucky and have a cool family and a cool star quarterback. But on the field, I hyped up this game. And man, did I get let down. The Ravens absolutely took the Chargers to the woodshed, my man, and would not let them out until it was all zeros on the clock. Lamar Jackson didn't have a superstar day, but this is what, when we talk about guys being on that other level, the Patrick Mahomes, the Aaron Rodgers, the Tom Brady's, when you don't have your best stuff, when you can't really find your groove, you still find ways to make sure other guys excel. And that's what he did. That's what Lamar Jackson did by having all three of his running backs, all, by the way, were not on the team when the season started, all run effectively, all get touchdowns, including Le'Veon Bell. Remember him? Yeah, he's number 17 now for the Ravens because, you know, that's a hot number to pick as a running back. So, like, I was absolutely blown away by the Ravens' performance on the defensive side of the ball and the way the way Lamar Jackson figured it out in the end. And I was just disappointed with the Chargers.
Yeah. Yeah, well, when we talked about previewing this last week, I think I did pick the Ravens, obviously, in a closer game than this. But I felt like, you know, and you go back to these guys that weren't on the roster, and week one was one of those games where I didn't take a lot of grain to that loss to the Raiders because, you know, they were just adapting to just things that were rolling right off their back going into the start of that season. And as I wanted to see more from the Ravens, which is why I, you know, wasn't totally surprised. I was surprised, obviously, at the Chargers' offensive output and their ability not to move the ball at all. But I did feel like Baltimore's back in that game plan mode of we can drag you down playing this way. We can beat a bad team needing 500 yards from Lamar. And then we can go just rip the hearts out of a good team with just a pedestrian performance by Lamar in the sense of stats, right? He's still going to be that floor leader. He's still going to be that great, you know, point guard out there, no matter whether he puts up a triple-double or just has one of those, you know, low stat games that provides, you know, a like a floor general type of, you know, atmosphere. But that's what the Ravens, you know, Harbaugh, the Ravens, they're good at game planning. I felt like if the Chargers were going to hit a wall after these two big wins, one on a short week, it was going to go to back to Baltimore and probably be tough. And I just think they never got going. Baltimore just kept rolling it on them.
I got to give the Ravens credit for this and this first and foremost. The Ravens did something that, one, I didn't think they had the guts to do, and two, that I scream in my television for other teams to do against teams like Tom Brady or quarterbacks like Tom Brady against guys like Ben Roethlisberger, what more teams are doing now. Do not sit in a zone. These guys have had 20 years in the league. They see it coming a mile away. You cannot stop them if you're going to play zone. So what the Ravens did is they literally got in the shirt of every skill player for the Chargers and made them fight for every single yard outside the hash. And it worked. It worked. They clearly couldn't get deep on their routes. Justin Herbert could not get enough time to find guys open, which led to some mistakes that he made. But all that gets credited to the Ravens defense. Because right. I didn't think they could do that to what the, I mean, Mike Williams did get hurt, but they had, Austin Eckler had 7 yards total.
Yeah, and that's what the Ravens did from the bat is they put the Chargers in terrible down and distances day long. I mean, it was just never favorable. So they could get in your shirt, and then they could mix in blitzes, and they could mix in different looks because they had you in so many bad down and distances that gives it harder for a quarterback to read, right? That's one great thing about Brady is Brady's always been the great reader of even terrible down and distances, third and 16s, second and long, you know, he's terrible down, and he's always been that guy. And that's one thing I think that just keeps coming. I think Justin Herbert is so good. He's going to look at this game film and he's going to see where they were exploited in down and distances and where they have to get better at reading certain, you know, or play calling through those things against the kind of defenses that, you know, the Ravens type of pose, because you can't win championships until you can beat teams like that, or at least go on their field and compete with them down to the final wire and be able to say, we need to do one or two things different to beat this team. Right now, the Chargers are looking up at a Ravens going, we got to do a dozen things different if we were to beat this team. And the Ravens are looking good right now, and where that makes the standings, right? That game was big for a lot of teams in both of those toughest divisions in the AFC too. I thought, you know, you're looking at it, Baltimore, now they've got that, they've out to that 5-1 start. The Bengals still help themselves getting to 4-2. Pittsburgh keeps helping themselves winning a third straight, and Cleveland kind of goes out and pulls in the Chargers. Pulls the Chargers. Cleveland and the Chargers have the exact same games after coming off of these amazing games against each other. And then they go out and they lay these eggs. And then all of a sudden, the Chargers, who are looking like, hey, man, teams are in the rearview mirror, fall back to 4-2. Vegas gets to 4-2 with a big win. And right. The Chiefs now, kind of like Pittsburgh, are, you know, shake off and get to 3-3 and things don't look so bleak now. And team, and those divisions are bunched 3-3s, two of them, a 4-2, 2 4-2s in the AFC West, and then the 5-1 in Baltimore. And those are the, those are, I think, the divisions that are gonna, you know, other than Buffalo, those teams in that division are going to be your meat and potatoes of who are the wild cards. You know, Buffalo.
Two of the things that I saw that we absolutely have to take a look at: 12 carries, 2 for Herbert, 6 for Eckler, 4 for Kelly. Total for the game, 12 rushing yards. I mean, 12 attempts, 39 passes. That unlevel, that lack of balance is going to be difficult. And I don't care if they were playing 8 guys in a box. If you're running it into a wall, you got to keep running it into a wall. 12 rushing attempts, 2 by the quarterback on a scramble, obviously, for 12 yards. That's not good enough. And we're going to have a lot more on this and other things that happen in the NFL when we come back. It is Browner and Lawhead. Back on the horse. Your favorite friends, of course. I literally just made that up. Talk about making things up. Browner and Lawhead. Yo, Jason, did you hear Scott say that the name of the show should be Brown Man and Law Man? Did you hear this conversation? Were you a part of this?
I just said something when we were talking about the promo codes. That was when we were at the Torrey Holistic. Yes. And I just said I used Brown Man one time, maybe, and I just said, oh, maybe we should use Law Man. We got Brown Man, Law Man. Now, I didn't know.
He completely reconstructed that story into us having a conversation about changing the name of the show from Brown and Lawhead to Brown Man and Law Man. Terrible story.
Maybe we can get like merch made up that says Brown Man, Law Man on Browner and Lawhead or something. But no, I think Browner and Lawhead is the perfect. that's our names.
It made no sense. So Scott, what are you doing?
Maybe two people in my life call me Lawman, like as a nickname. So it's only going to like hit two people that I know really good.
I'm John Browner, and that is the voice of Jason Lawhead. We are also known as Browner and Lawhead, and that is it. Nothing else for now. I also thought about, before we got started, naming the show John and Jason, because it just flows easy, and he shot that down. Yeah. So here we are at Browner and Lawhead. We're definitely not.
Then you could do J&J is already Johnson and Johnson. Yeah, okay. Yeah. So it would be cool if Johnson and Johnson didn't exist. That would be a cool, because you could really logo up the J&J kind of cool.
Without having to put like some weird asterisk next to it so they don't know we're stealing their. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. We could put it all on. I mean, technically, we could put it on a shirt as a pure bottle. Just
like, oh, that would be cool.
And two, if we don't
we may have to have a rebranding meeting here just for the merch purposes. We can't get sponsorship on this wall.
Right. We can put some shirts up there and sell them.
Branding here.
$9.99. We had a outstanding conversation to start the first half of the pod. And if you missed anything, you feel free to head over to YouTube and catch the show in the picture form of it. Or you can head over to your phone, thumb up the podcast, and Google Kaplan and Crew, and we're Browner and Lawhead. We are in there, and you will find us where you find them. And so that takes care of that. We talked about Jason's performance this weekend. We talked a little bit back and forth about what happened with me and the Louis C.K. show. Again, shout out to all the great friends who came up to me at the show saying what's up.
Nice.
Always big, always love. Shout out to y'all all the time, every day, all day. But let's talk winners. We talked about losers in the Mahomes family. Basically, we become first family of trash outside NFL circles. But with that said, we got to talk winners. And if we're talking winners, we got to talk about my girls. Right there, baby. The Chicago Sky won their very first WNBA championship in their franchise's history. And the entire series, for me, is marked by this image. This image is going to go everywhere I go for the rest of my life. That is Kalia Cooper just staring down one of these poor, unassuming Phoenix Mercury players, whatever the hell their name is, because she thought she had it, and she didn't. So shout out to the Kalia Cooper for being the finals MVP, by the way. The reason why this is a winner for me and why this story resonates, Candace Parker is from Chicago. Candace Parker was the number one pick for the LA Sparks. She went on to win the MVP, All-Star Game MVP, Finals MVP, and winning the national and winning a WNBA championship with the Los Angeles Sparks. Over her career, she hit a road of decline, as we all do when you ascend to such a high praise or stature. And she, at one point in time, I think it was 2019, was voted the most overrated player in the WNBA. So things seesawed, and she, whatever happened, Derek Fisher as the head coach, she just kind of soured on him. He soured on her. Shocker, Derek Fisher souring on a woman and vice versa. She ends up leaving them, returning home to Chicago with a promise to bring a championship back to Chicago. They were the, when the playoffs started in the WNBA playoffs, they were the lowest rated team in Vegas to win the championship. So if you put some money on last night, man, you cashing in this morning, courtesy of the Chicago Sky. They're my winner. Shout out to Candace Parker. Shout out to the women of the Chicago Sky. Sky Town, baby.
Why is it named the Sky?
Because of the large buildings.
Because of the large building, because of the skyline. So that, yes, that's where they, that inspiration came from. Okay.
Yes.
Yeah, so, I mean, I would say this, that, you know, as a fan of basketball growing up in the game, my dad was a high school coach back in Ohio for many years. I had three sisters that played all solid ball players as well. And she, Candace Parker, probably for me, from my lifetime, I would say from college, from what I've seen her do there
at Tennessee with Pat Summitt.
Yeah. And her college career going into the early days of the WNBA. I mean, she's one of the earlier, you know, stars, mega stars at the, you know, kind of the beginning of the league, at least the beginning of it gaining its traction. She was definitely
right after the original, after the original eight. She was the
right,
in my opinion, of course, she was the first star after the original eight. The original eight being Lisa Leslie, Rebecca Lobo, right. Teresa Tom, Teresa
Cheryl
Thompson,
Swoops.
Cheryl Swoops. There's another woman I'm forgetting, but yes, the, after Rebecca, the original eight, she had, she was the first huge megastar, young lady dunking type of player to enter the WNBA.
And, you know, look, I've always, you know, preferred, I don't watch a lot of WNBA. I will.
Oh,
watch.
No one does. It's perfectly fine.
Well,
it's
getting traction now. I mean, I'll watch some highlights. But as a basketball fan and a guy that officiates basketball and sees how much more talent has risen through the girls' ranks over the years. I mean, there's some really good girls' basketball players at a lot of different levels. It used to be for a long time. You know, you'd have a good girl or two on a team, and there'd be a lot of players that, you know, you're just filling some spots,
hoping they don't get hurt.
Right. I mean, just kids out there that just aren't, you know, but, and, you know, a good team would maybe be assembled of a really good player carrying a team, or two players kind of carrying
a
team. You could get away with that for a long time in girls basketball. You can't do that even at the high school level. You have to have well-rounded players at all the positions, fundamentally sound, even if they're not your big scorers or they're your stat people. You need rebounder. You need fundamentally sound players.
Being the tall girl isn't enough anymore.
Yeah, you know, so, but what I think Candace Parker really represents, in at least everything I've ever seen from watching, you know, because I'm obviously, I love the game, and I'm 5'9" and a half, 5'10" top. So, especially the girls' college game, when it gets into the Sweet 16, I do watch a lot of those games because I enjoy watching the game perfected below the rim still to a degree, you know, and they really do a great job, those top women's programs do a great job getting that game perfected, and the passing game, the pick and roll, the screen, the backdoor stuff, all the action that they got to get going to perfect the below the rim game. So she's the best player I've ever seen in my lifetime from the women's perspective is what I'm saying. And I'm glad she got that title in Chicago like that. And it is really cool. I was paying some attention to this little finals because I am a Brittany Griner fan, and, you know, Taurasi.
So, played great.
Know, you know, you know, good stuff.
She played, Brittany Griner played great. The Suns played great. The Sky just had it on a mission, and they were better this year, and they got the job done. So shout out to them. So back to the football. There were a lot of huge, huge games And there were obviously, for this particular show, there are too many games to go over. And we don't just like to breeze through things. What we'd like to do is find a couple of topics, settle on those topics, and have those topics as conversations. This is the question I have for you, Jason. Would you rather talk about, because we're not going to talk about the Rams because they absolutely blew the doors off the Giants.
Yeah, that was expected.
We can talk about what the Cardinals did to the Browns.
Ugh.
Or we can have a real conversation about what the Raiders did to the Broncos.
Yeah, I mean, I think out of all those matchups, I think the three games you just touched on right there, I think that the significance of that Browns loss for them in that division is probably the kind of the bigger story of the picture. But I also think that winning that football game the way the Raiders did over the Broncos says so much more about what's in that late Raider locker room right now than it does about what's in that Bronco locker room right now. Because what the Raiders had to go through and how the Broncos had them, it was in Denver.
Can we do this? Because I want to talk about both those games.
Okay.
But I want to talk about this first. And you hit on something, and I want to try to see if we differ on this. I don't think anything changed for the Raiders. I think all they did was get Gruden out of there. Their game plan wasn't different. They didn't run different plays. They didn't start making someone else. They didn't make Henry Ruggs their main feature instead of Darren Waller. They didn't run more or less. Like, they did the exact same thing they would have done if Gruden was there. So this is why I got a lot of messages, and I would curse if this was allowed, but I don't want to get in trouble. I said Carl Nassib should have gone to practice the day he skipped out when all the media was there discussing Gruden's homophobic comments. And I said that because, and I will repeat it again here, when that moment comes about and you have a gay player in your locker room and your coach has been fired for negatively speaking about gay people, this is the opportunity that they never have to have a person who is gay in the lifestyle to speak for them from a player perspective of how it made them feel and how they feel after that. For that person to skip it made him look unprofessional. Because you know what the Raiders did on Sunday? They looked professional. They looked like a bunch of men who were businesslike and went out there on the field against a terrible team, but nonetheless, sometimes everybody needs a softball, to be professional and execute, and they did that. And so to me, and my question to you is, were you shocked by that? Because I wasn't, because their leader is the quarterback, who's a very even-keeled professional guy.
Yeah, no, I don't disagree with what you're saying. And that what my point, the first things I said was, it says so much about what's in that Raider locker room against what's in that Denver locker room. And my point being was this was, and I agree, they probably go out and have the same kind of game under John Gruden. Now, here's a little question you can be posed, though, which is kind of interesting, is that after Gruden got fired, this whole thing just got shut down and it all went away. I mean, it all went away. There isn't even any more reporters trying to report on any of this stuff. So what I do pose you is this: if only there was the first email out and that leaked out and Gruden wasn't fired and the media was trying to find other stuff, or they were kind of still keeping the story alive on a heartbeat, do the Raiders roll into that weekend with Gruden having to have press conferences about something and still apologize? And then still people having talking heads about it all week. I don't know about that. But that's the big surprise for me was, I'm surprised that, yes, the Raider, what's in that later Raider locker room, was able to really go out there on a Sunday after, even though the distraction got squashed pretty quick when Gruden quit, go out there and just take care of the kind of business against a division opponent. And yeah, Denver's not, they didn't beat
anybody. They're terrible.
They're terrible. But
Denver's got to be reeling big time. They've got to be looking at themselves in this locker room, heading to Cleveland on a short week, Baker Mayfield or Nick Chubb or none of them or whatever, and think, good Lord, like, we just got beat by an interim coach in his sixth day on the job, and we didn't even have a game plan for it. What are we going to do here?
Because, you know, also, they look,
Vic Fangio was getting, like, you know, all the fan G.O., man, and now he's in.
What?
You know, I don't know. I was trying to think of a funny quib with that, but nothing came up. So,
dude, anyway. Vic Fangio, I said this when they hired him. I will repeat it here again because no one – I didn't have this show when they hired Vic Fangio. He's going to be a terrible head coach. I have a podcast where I have it. I will replay it if you want to hear it. Dated and time-stamped. Also, I'll repeat this again. John Elway doesn't know what he's doing. I will repeat that again, and I said that a long time ago too. Peyton Manning is the reason why John Elway hasn't been fired. That is it. Yeah. John Elway has gotten it wrong at every single turn except for Peyton Manning, who chose them. They didn't choose him.
Right.
Period.
Yeah.
Period.
Yeah, really.
John Elway has got the quarterback position wrong more times than any current GM in football. Period. Period.
No doubt. I mean, at the end of the day, really, Von Miller has kept his job, you know, status where it is. I mean, that Super Bowl ring gives you, you know, especially if you're a hometown hero, if you won two as a player, and even if you've screwed things up, but you won one as a GM, you've got shelf life for a while. And that's really what's kept him on that big shelf life there. And yeah, I mean, Denver now at 3-3 and trending terribly after that 3-0 start. I mean, big game, big win for the Raiders. 4-2 now at top with the Chargers. You know, Chiefs are not gonna, you know, they're not going away. Have a say at this thing and probably still might win that division, no doubt. But the Raiders in that wild card bunch up looking, you know, good through six. They're probably them and the Bengals would be my biggest surprises through 6 weeks if I had to say anything.
Now let's get to the top. Let's get to the second topic that I spoke of. And not the game in its entirety, but something very small that everybody can relate to. Kyler Murray and Baker Mayfield are very similar in these ways. They were both number one picks. They both went to downtrodden franchises when they were picked up by both these franchises. They both have had head coaching changes. They both had their rosters built basically around them to succeed as much as they possibly can. So this is a very good correlation between a guy who is worthy of the number one pick and a guy who was the number one pick. Baker Mayfield was the number one pick. And the reason why they haven't signed him is because of what you saw on the field on Sunday. I'm not giving Baker Mayfield $40 million a year. If I'm the Browns front office, I look at the landscape of quarterbacks that are out there. I look at what I have on my roster. I'm not giving that guy $40 million. Not. I'd give him 30 because of the way that it's structured and quarterbacks have to get fat checks. I give him 30, but I'm not giving him 42. I'm not giving him what Dak got. I'm damn sure not giving him what Patrick Mahomes got. And that's what he's asking for. But he ain't delivering that. Jason, you're a fan of this team. Would you be comfortable locking in Baker Mayfield for at lowest $42 million a year going forward?
I mean, you can't, you know, I don't want to be sour on Baker. I don't.
It's not about being sour. It's about.
No, I know. But I'm talking from a Browns fan's perspective. I'm just kind of airing that out first. If any Browns fans hear what I'm about to say, and I don't want to be sour on Baker, and I'm not sour on Baker. I really think that this team right now, at least in its, you know, design, has enough intangibles for him to be a quarterback that can win the Super Bowl on this team right now. Now, I'm not, you know, so convinced that, you know, he there's a lot of ways he can be the quarterback that can't get us there either. So there's a little bit of indifference in my confidence, if you will. Okay. So, but you know, what I would do is I would sit down and with Baker and talk to him and say, you know, why don't you take less money here right? Take this much money, whatever mm-hmm. that money you carve out, you can see, and it's not anywhere near that kind of money. I'm sorry. It's just not. And I would say, look, and why don't you use that as your next chip on your shoulder? Why don't you take this contract here mm-hmm. and not like it, but stay in Cleveland with Chubb so we can afford all you guys, huh?
Yep.
Because what do you want us to do? Give you Mahomes money and then have a deteriorating set, everything else around you, and eventually not be able to sign guys in areas, and you know, because you're not as good as those guys. Sorry, but you're not as good as Lamar Jackson. You might not be as good as Joe Burrow, you know? So if you're the third best quarterback in our division, look Ooh. In the mirror and take less money. And maybe we can all win a championship together if we can spend some of that other money and keep guys here or go get other guys. And
that's
and,
third best in the division if they don't if the Steelers don't trade for Deshaun Watson. You're the third best quarterback in the division. And all signs right, point to Pittsburgh trading for Deshaun Watson, apparently.
Yeah. So I'm just saying right now, Deshaun, whatever, like at best you are. And that's if Deshaun comes in there and stumbles around the Pittsburgh offense, who knows, or if Ben stays there and just keeps being Ben at this level. Like at best you are, at best. So take that as the motivation. Take the fact that two other teams in the division have better quarterbacks that are producing more for their teams right now. And you know, you can use the four coaches in 4 years excuse all you like, but Joe Burrow's in his 14th freaking game with his coach, and Justin Herbert's in his, you know, second season with his first coach. Second season, second coach ever, right? So
10 seconds.
That's what I say. And I say, if you can't sit down and accept that fact, then we have to move on.
Whew. There's no better way to end that. Brown and Lawhead, we'll see y'all tomorrow. Peace.
Peace.